Well, spring is in full swing, although it pretty much feels like summer, but it's a great time either way to take stock of your upcoming summer reading. This hour, we'll give you some help with that list and talk summer books. You can give us your suggestions, and we'll try to give some back your direction as well. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm happy to be with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Mike Harfke. He is Deputy Reviews Editor and Fiction Reviews Editor at Publishers Weekly. And we're always happy to take your phone calls as well. We'd love to hear what you're reading, what you're looking forward to reading. Maybe what, if you're in a book club, what is on the must-read list there? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org. And we'd also be curious to know, are there books that you like to reread every summer? Books that just sort of encapsulate what a great summer read is, maybe your best summer read of all time. 1-800-642-1234. And Mike Harfke, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks for having me.
Well, obviously, you have your finger on the publishing industry there. What are you excited about come summer?
Well, it's funny because we're knee-deep in coming up with our big announcements issue for the fall, so I've had to sort of step back a little bit. I've been, you know, reading, you know, some big books that are coming along, you know, come September, October, November, like Colson Whitehead's new book, Zone One, and Vanessa Divenbach's book, The Language of Flowers, which is all over this recent book expo. But those are, you know, a little further down the line. So for the summer, you know, things that are either about to be published or that are already out, you know, I have a pretty broad reading list myself. I've been rereading two or three books that I always sort of go to.
Oh, really? What are they?
Well, The Great Gatsby is sort of probably my go-to reread of choice. I have a friend that actually rereads it every year, starting in June. I don't do that, but I've probably read it, you know, half a dozen times.
What do you like about The Great Gatsby? Is it one of those where you feel like you can just return to it again and again, and it's always good?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the rare sort of perfect book. I think that it keeps giving. You know, the more you read it, the more little layers and connections you find. You know, Fitzgerald's prose was just so precise, and it seems effortless on the surface, but it has, I think, a lot of formal layers and a lot of, you know, little threads connect here and there. And it's also just sort of a wonderfully timeless story, you know, of just, you know, belonging and, you know, outsider status and you know, things like this. And I also am sort of a romantic fan of that age as well, so it's nice to become sort of steeped in that again.
And it's very summery. I mean, it takes place out on the water, and it seems to kind of ooze that summer feeling.
Yeah, East and West Egg, out of, you know, fictional in Long Island, and I'm not that far from there now. And it's interesting, you know, to get new contexts on things as well, because I, you know, grew up in the Midwest, and then ended up on the West Coast, and, you know, for the last 10 years I've been on the East Coast, so I had read that before I really had any idea what Long Island actually was.
Hmm.
You know, so.
So that's one of your rereads. What's the other one?
Well, I just finished rereading Lolita.
Ah.
Which, you know, I sort of, it's another book that I think formally, you know, just keeps sort of giving, and, you know, you think it's about this, but it's actually, oh, I see, it's really much more about death and fear of aging and, you know, than about, you know, pedophilia or anything like that. And, you know, also Humbert, to me, is such a fantastic narrator. It's such an act of seduction, that Nabokov really, I think, very cleverly pulled off. He knew that, you know, he had to create this narrator who would become really difficult to dislike, you know, so that he, you know, he could suck you in and let you, you know, sort of not accept, obviously, but at least go along and listen to him.
And there's been, you know, reading Lolita in Tehran, for instance, was a big book about, you know, sort of about reading Lolita. Do you read it differently now that there's been these sort of different cultural overlays?
I don't, but I mean, reading Lolita in Tehran, I thought was fantastic, and I love how that is possible. You know, I read it maybe differently because I also come from film in some ways, and I've seen, you know, both filmed versions of the book, neither of which, you know, were completely successful, you know, but I think the original Stanley Kubrick one, you know, at least captured the sort of essence of the book, maybe. It's, a, you know, one of those books I think that's probably impossible to film, you know, properly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm rereading Frankenstein just for fun, and...
I'm surprised you have time to read with all the new books coming in. It's interesting all the rereading you're doing.
They sit by my bedside for several weeks, you know, and I dip in and out a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in terms of new books, I mean, you know, I recently made this transition at Publishers Weekly from handling largely nonfiction to fiction, so I'm sort of catching up, playing catch-up on a lot of fiction. But, you know, one of the books that I'm loving, I just finished, is Clyde Edgerton's The Night Train, and it's a slim book, and I don't know if you're that familiar with Edgerton. He wrote a really lovely book several years ago called Walking Across Egypt that had an older lady as the protagonist, and this is set in 1963, mostly about in the South, in North Carolina, and it is sort of this really slow-burning story, a lovely story in a lot of ways, about a friendship that can't really exist between a young white boy and a young black boy, and all through music. And what's I find so fantastic about this, I mean, this takes place about a year before Dr. King, you know, was awarded the Nobel Prize, and all of the civil rights things going on are really sort of mostly in the background of the story. It's really an almost plotless, thin book about just these young guys trying to learn how to play music. And, you know, there are a lot of picaresque, amazing details that I think Edgerton's really fantastic at. There's a fantastic scene where, you know, this boy's name is Larry Lime, but his grandmother has raised him, and she's given everybody these crazy names in the family, and Larry Lime's name, I'm going to see if I can find it, is Larry Lime, Beacon of Time, Reckoning Breath on Me, Nolan. That's his full name.
That's
they
pretty
call him
good.
Larry, yeah, it's a mouthful. They call him Larry Lime, and he has a dancing chicken, and, you know, he's the African-American boy, and the white boys who are trying to play James Brown-like music want to get on television, and, you know, it's just, you know, it's sort of like a series of little events. They drop a chicken in a theater that's playing the Birds, you know, trying to scare people, and sneak Larry into the drive-in movie theater that's whites only, and, you know, it's pretty fascinating.
It's interesting that you said it's almost plotless, because I have a hard time imagining things that are plotless getting published these days.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think it's one of those things that, especially in the last couple of years, I mean, we've seen, you know, the industry is, you know, the amount of first fiction, the amount of debut books that are coming along to us really took a dive, you know, about a year ago. And I think that it's starting to work its way back up. You know, this recent book expo here in New York, the mood was bright. You know, everybody thought it was more like the book expos of 3 or 4 years ago. And but for the last 2 years, publishers were really only buying books that they felt very certain about. And I think if this was not Edgerton's, you know, seventh or ninth novel, it might not have sold.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. And he also has an amazing ability to create, to adopt this colloquial voice, to really immerse you in this, you know, culture and this era.
We are going to have as a guest on a Friday morning on the Veronica Rickert Show, Anne Patchett, and her book Bel Canto is one, I have to say, it's one of my favorite books of all time. It's one of those books where I finished it and the mood and how I felt and where I was and everything is just sort of imprinted on me permanently forever. And so I'm really looking forward to this next book. Are you familiar with it?
I am, yeah. Yeah, I'm actually reading it now. I haven't finished, but I also loved Bel Canto. I think Patchett is an amazing storyteller. I think, you know, I guess I have even sort of, it's probably inaccurate, but I've sort of thought of her in some ways as a very literary Stephen King type who, you know, creates characters that you really care about and love and then puts them into sort of crazy or impossible situations.
I'll have to tell her your comparison to Stephen King.
Hate me. We actually did a interview with her recently that appeared in the magazine, and I'm loving the new book, and you know, I think that you know, there was a slightly mixed review in the Times of it recently, the New York Times, that I thought was not particularly accurate. You know, I think it was Janet Maslin possibly who said it was her least exotic book, and I find it, you know, wonderfully exotic, actually.
Well, just reading the plot. The plot is plenty exotic, but you want to summarize it for us?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially this young woman who works in the pharmaceutical industry is sent to the Amazon by her boss / lover to attempt to find, well, actually, one of the doctors that's been in the field there. And this is what's so sort of fascinating, you know, about Patchett is she had said when we talked to her that she wanted to base her new book in, you know, the exploration of new drugs. And so that was what led her to the Amazon, you know, for the setting. So in the Amazon, one of the doctors that's been ahead has been killed. And there's a rogue scientist working there still. And so Marina, who's the protagonist, goes in to try to get to the bottom of what's going on there, and in essence goes native, and it's kind of like a, you know, female Heart of Darkness.
Wow, it sounds like it's powerful reading.
It really is, and it's gripping. I mean, you know, speaking of like what Clyde Edgerton doesn't do, you know, Ann Patchett does, you know, wonderfully. It's you know, it's a real page turner in a way.
And that one's called State of Wonder.
State of Wonder, yeah, and we gave it a starred review here, and are big fans.
Are you familiar with the book? It caught my eye. Before I Go to Sleep. It sounds like a literary thriller.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, that's, you know, the thing that's great about working here is that, you know, there are several reviews editors and working in different, you know, areas of the magazine and different genres. And so we talk and, you know, we're always, the main question almost daily is, what are you reading? What are you reading? And it's fantastic. I mean, we receive probably 1,000 books a week for consideration. So it can be overwhelming. You can feel like you're kind of buried in books. You know, the great stuff does definitely rise to the surface. And so Before I Go to Sleep by this guy, S.J. Watson, is interesting. I haven't read it, but what I've been hearing, you know, is about, you know, it's about this woman, Christine Lucas, who... It's a fantastic premise. I mean, it's really clever. She wakes up every morning not able to... She's got insomnia, right? She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know where she is. And there's a man...
She's got amnesia, right?
Yeah, there's a man in the bed next to her. She doesn't know who he is. And, you know, he daily... I mean, it's almost like a not-funny Groundhog Day. You know, he tells her who he is. He's her husband. They've been married for, you know, 2 decades. And, you know, she eventually starts to get into therapy to try to figure out, you know, what's going on. She's not getting any you know, of her memory back. You know, every night, like it's, you know, that movie Memento that came out, I don't know, 10 or 12
right,
years ago,
right.
You know, where the guy was tattooing things on his body because every day it was a clean slate. And this is what happens to Christine again. And what's really fascinating is that, Watson apparently takes this premise that could have been a very, a lot of premises are gimmicky, and this could have been a sort of cheap device, but he really deepens it with a lot of other things that happen. You know, one of the things that Christine's therapist urges her to do is keep a journal that's private. She doesn't show Ben. And because she wakes up the next day with no memory, she reads in her journal what she's been able to write down day by day, and she sees the words, "Don't trust Ben," who's the only person in her life, really. So it calls everything into question again.
That just sounds like a good one if you like thrillers and page-turners.
I think so.
And John Grisham's got a new one out, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, I'm not. I confess, I haven't read Grisham in a while, but I've heard good things. You know, about the new Grisham.
Well, I don't think you need to read them because everybody else is.
I know exactly. Everybody I see on the subway. You know, like,
right.
Two out of three people are reading either Grisham or James Patterson. You know, and Patterson is another page turning guy. He's certainly not a darling of the critical establishment, but. My mother, for one, is a huge fan, and, Patterson famously said that the pages turn themselves.
They do. I used to love John Grisham, and I haven't read Patterson, but I sort of got to the point where I got tired of that urgent feeling where you had to turn the page that quickly, and, I had to put him aside.
I know. Personally, for me, I don't necessarily read, solely for plot. I came of age in art school and I did an MFA in creative writing myself and, studied form. And that's why I'm drawn back again to books like Lolita or, quote unquote difficult, books or even, like Clyde Edgerton's book's not difficult at all, but there's a lot beneath the surface. It's not all just about what's happening in the story.
We're talking summer books this hour with our guest, Mike Harfke. He is deputy reviews editor and fiction reviews editor at Publishers Weekly. And we're looking forward to taking your phone call. Tell us what you're reading right now that you're loving or what you're looking forward to reading this summer. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And also, what makes a really satisfying summer read. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert in this week for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about great summer books and just kind of books in general as well. And speaking of books, you'll want to tune in at 12:30 today for Chapter a Day. Jim Fleming is reading from Twice a Spy by Keith Thompson. What happens when a former CIA agent can no longer trust his own mind? That on this Chapter a Day at 12:30. Mike Harfke is our guest this hour, deputy reviews editor and fiction reviews editor at Publishers Weekly. And we'll take our first caller now. We have Juliet with us from Oconomowoc. Hi, Juliet.
Hello. I know that this speaker has featured mostly adult books, but I have young children, and I'm always struggling to find appropriate reads that I will enjoy reading with my precocious children. And so one of my favorites this year was a 2010 Newbery Honor book called Where the Mountain Meets the Moon by Grace Lynn. It's a fantastic story with very short chapters, which are appropriate for emerging readers. It's a story of a young girl who has an adventure, and then throughout there are Chinese folktales that are separate from the story but impact the story. And it's just beautifully written. She's a wonderful writer, and I found I really enjoyed reading it with my kids. And it's the first book they've asked me to reread with them.
Oh, yeah, sounds like a beautiful one.
It really is, and the folktales themselves are not connected, so they can be read individually if you just wanted to skip to the folktales. And so, perfect summer read.
Sounds very nice.
It picks up at your leisure, and then the chapters are very short. So, again, appropriate for a kid's attention span.
Right. Okay, well, thank you for that suggestion. Are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, I am a little bit. We cover middle grade and YA stuff here. It reminded me, actually, of the Pied Piper and you know, the sort of folktale, you know, aspect of it. It didn't remind me of it. It made me think of the Pied Piper as, you know, a possible sort of going back to the source type accompaniment. I don't know if the caller had ever really thought about checking that out, but it's really fantastic. It's one of those things that's just sort of in the public consciousness, you know, all of these original, you know, folk tales and stuff. But it's
what is that one called? The Pied Piper?
The Pied Piper of Hamelin. It's by, you know, Robert Browning.
Oh, right.
You know, I mean, it's a little dark, you know, so, you know, you would want to make sure that, you know, it wasn't necessarily for children who are too young, although kids, I think, today are really taking a lot of pleasure in, you know, sort of the gross aspect of a lot of the, you know, YA and middle grade books. But the Pied Piper of Hamelin, it's just sort of a classic.
Can you think of any other young adult novels maybe that would also make great reading for grown-ups?
Well, I mean, you know, I can't tell you how many people, this is a little dated now, but all of the J.K. Rowling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody has been reading that. You know, all of my friends have read all of those books.
So I guess everyone's looking for the next Harry Potter.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think that, you know, we haven't necessarily seen anything like that come along since, you know, but... there are some other YA books, I mean, especially for women and girls, you know, that are hitting quite a chord. This great book, 13 Reasons Why, is, you know, deals with suicide. So it's a pretty heavy subject, but it's, you know, it's a really kind of beautiful book written sort of after this girl in school has killed herself, and it's 13 chapters, and she sent a recording to 13 people to sort of try to get at, you know, the why. And I know adults who've read that and been moved.
Yeah, I think I've seen that one. So that sounds like a good read.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There are others that are, you know, less serious. You know, there's I am a creature of unspeakable evil, and I want to be your class president. Just sort of, you know, reminiscent of Tracy Flick in Election.
Right.
You know, a really fun book as well.
Is that a newer one?
It came out, I think, about a year ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's take another caller. We have Alan joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Alan.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I have two books to mention. One is The Information by James Gleick, which is an amazing, crystal clear explanation of everything. It is a wonderful read.
Is that nonfiction? That's nonfiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what?
Nonfiction.
Yeah, it's nonfiction.
Oh, yes, it's a nonfiction book.
Great.
The other one is fiction. It came out a couple of years ago, but everybody in Milwaukee should read it. It's Red Weather by Paul Tutongi. It's a really fine novel set in the Latvian community in Milwaukee.
Thanks. I'm actually not all that familiar with that. I know we covered it, but I haven't personally read it. What does it cover?
It's really a story of the development of the socialist movement in Milwaukee, and it's very cleverly done.
Yeah.
He was a new writer, and I don't know if he's published anything since, but I thoroughly enjoyed it and enjoy rereading it, and it's a real good summer read. And don't forget about James Gleick. I know it's nonfiction, but it's an amazing book.
Yeah, so far he has not come out with a new book. It's Tutongi, I think.
Yes, he is himself of Latvian background.
Yeah, excellent.
Great. Well, thank you, Ellen. Thanks for the suggestions. And we'll move next to Herb in Milwaukee. Hi, Herb.
Hello. There is a new author that I found. I guess he's actually been around for a while. There's a series of books, and he's got a fascinating character named Bernie Gunther. The author is Philip, I think it's pronounced Kerr, K-E-T, the double R, and the protagonist, I don't know if you'd want to call him a hero, because he's kind of a, at the same time, a hero and an anti-hero, is a very believable kind of character, and it made me a fan of Philip Kerr.
Yeah, he's really popular around here in the mystery and thriller sections.
Philip Kerr was the name?
Yeah, K-E-R-R.
Are there other mysteries? I mean, I don't know if the whole Scandinavian sort of thriller is still in vogue right now, or if we've moved on to something else, but what would fit that bill?
Well, I mean, we've kind of, I think, we haven't necessarily moved on. I think the light is still sort of shining in that region, and especially now there's a memoir of Stieg Larsson's wife that's coming out soon. I'm not sure what it's called. It's something simple like My Life with Stieg Larsson, or A Life of Stieg Larsson or something like that. And then there are some other writers that have sort of risen in after Larsson. And one of them, speaking of Patterson again, is, collaborating with him now. And she became, because of her collaboration with Patterson, became the second author from there to get onto the bestseller list. Hmm. So that region is still really captivating people.
Well, and speaking of wives who are writing memoirs, one of Frank Sinatra's wife has written a memoir that's supposed to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's actually fantastic. And, it's interesting because there was also Frank the Voice that came out, last fall.
Right, yeah.
And one of my colleagues here, actually, Mark Rotella, wrote a book that trafficked in the similar area called Amore. It was, about Italian song. And all of that, and then we get Barbara Sinatra, writing with Wendy Holden this Lady Blue Eyes, and the subtitle is My Life with Frank Sinatra, and it really is. I mean, she was this girl from Missouri, like me, although I'm a guy, and ended up becoming a model, a showgirl in Vegas, married one of the Marx Brothers, met, Sinatra and fell in love. And they had this, long, really long, marriage, 22 years, the longest of all of Sinatra's marriages. And, she doesn't sugarcoat, Sinatra's sort of, bad points. It's sort of a warts and all, memoir. There's angry fights and, a lot of alcohol and that kind of thing. But she still, comes down to the point, that Sinatra was the most romantic man that she'd ever known. And it's a very romantic book.
Are there any other memoirs out that are turning your head right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think something that I didn't expect to like, and I don't know why exactly. I mean, maybe because of the sort of Judd juggernaut. But, Ashley Judd has a book out that's called All That Is Bitter and Sweet.
Right, that one seemed intriguing.
Yeah, and, in part, what actually attracted me to it was the writer that Judd worked with, who is Marianne Boulers, whose own book, Lone Wolf, from a few years ago, which was about Eric Rudolph, the abortion clinic bomber, who went on the run for 5 or 6 years, was fantastic. And so Boulers is a great writer, and I thought it was a really interesting choice that I assume Judd made to collaborate with Boulers. And so, you get in this book, the growing, the childhood, and, there were some tumultuous experiences, some abuse and things like that. She's had to wrestle her whole life with issues of anger and abandonment and all of that. But, largely, this book is about her efforts, particularly with women's issues in the global community. And, people might forget that Judd actually went to Harvard and, graduated with a master's, just last year, I think, right? Mm. Because she's so committed to social justice. So it's not just some, actress sort of, moonlighting. She's very passionate about this, and that really comes across. in the book. And so it's a really lovely read.
I guess if you're looking for a celebrity memoir that's more dishy, Rob Lowe has, isn't it, Rob? Yeah, he's got a memoir out right now.
Yeah, it seems like everybody kind of has a memoir out right now.
Right.
You know, Rob Lowe,
and it's on the bestseller list.
Yep. Well, I mean, he's a charming fellow, you know. I actually haven't dipped into the Lowe memoir yet, but there's something about him. I mean, maybe it's the fact that he's ageless. He looks like he's still about 30.
And yeah, I know, you know, you're right. I never thought of
that. He's got to be about 85 by now. I don't know, but he doesn't look it.
Let's read a couple of emails. Ross in Madison says, The Atlantic Monthly started a reading club with Margaret Atwood's The Blind Assassin. They're using Twitter as the discussion format, which is challenging. I don't know if you know about that effort. And Nancy in Green Bay says, I just finished a new book by Paula McCain called The Paris Wife. It tells the story of Ernest Hemingway's first marriage, told through the eyes of his wife, Hadley Richardson, and she really liked it.
Yeah, that's one that's on my list of things to read. I've read McCann in the past, and I just haven't got to that one yet. But I'm a big Hemingway fan, and I actually read I don't know if it was it's been so long, but it was a Hadley Hemingway book about their life that she wrote, or somebody wrote, but it was either a biography or an autobiography of Hadley Hemingway. That was really great. So yeah, and McCann is a really interesting, he's this Irish writer that, just sort of covers, his imagination seems somewhat unbound, It's definitely not tied to Ireland.
And another question, this is actually a question from Lou in Milwaukee, who says, I'm looking for something similar to the Nick Adams stories by Hemingway for some summer outdoorsy reading. Do you have any suggestions there?
That's interesting. I mean, I think that Jim Harrison is maybe a good fit. I don't know if who was the name on the emailer?
Lou.
Lou. I don't know if Lou has, read or is a fan of Jim Harrison, but I'm a huge fan. Harrison has a new book actually coming out in the fall, a novel, but he's a huge sort of master of the novella. And I know the Nick Adams stories, short stories, but taken together, it really gives you a sort of big, arc of this character, of Hemingway's character, Nick Adams. And I think that there's a similar guy in Jim Harrison's novellas called Brown Dog, who is, there's more humor there, but it's, it's similar terrain. It's very outdoorsy, and really just great stuff to read.
Okay, hope that helps you, Lou. And we'll take one more phone call before our break. This is Joe from Harper's Ferry. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Say, my brother just gave me a book by Bill Dyson, a short history of almost everything. I'm curious. I understand he
Oh.
Here.
I'm sorry, Joe. We kind of cut out. We'll try one more time. No?
I'm sorry.
You there?
Joe, are you there?
Are you breaking up?
Yeah, I think we lost him. Obviously, he was talking about Bill Bryson. I'm not sure where the question went after that, but I guess is there any more you can tell us about Bryson or anyone else who kind of hits those same chords in their writing?
Well, I love Bryson. I think he's hilarious and really interesting. I've learned things from reading his work. I think it's significant that he, was an American living in England. He brought an outsider's perspective, I think, to that culture. And, he's just entertaining as can be. I love Paul Theroux. He's definitely not as humorous as Bryson, but I think Theroux is probably, he's at the top of the travel writing. To call him a travel writer is not even, necessarily accurate, I don't think. He's a novelist, obviously, with Mosquito Coast and other books. But he has a new book out now called The Tao of Travel that I highly recommend. And it's just sort of a memoir of his travels. I mean, Theroux is one of those great adventurists where he took a train from Boston to Tierra del Fuego, and that was called the Old Patagonian Express, and he took a train through China and Russia, and wrote a book about it called Riding the Iron Rooster. And he has a very keen eye. His observations are incredibly astute and accurate.
So that one's called The Tao of Travel.
Yeah, Enlightenment from Lives on the Road, I think is the subtitle. And it's out now. It was end of May.
We're talking about new summer books, things to look forward to for your summer reading, with Mike Harvey, who is Deputy Reviews Editor and Fiction Reviews Editor at Publishers Weekly. And we'd love to hear from more of you this hour. What are you reading that you've really enjoyed? And do you read differently over the summer? Are you looking for different types of books? And if so, what is the quintessential summer book to you? We'd love to hear your recommendations and your thoughts at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, with you today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn. And coming up at 2 o'clock today, stay tuned for Talk of the Nation, as we talk about the relationship between doctors and nurses, and also comedian Aisha Tyler. That's 2 o'clock's Talk of the Nation. We are discussing summer books this hour with Mike Harvey, Deputy Reviews Editor and Fiction Reviews Editor at Publishers Weekly. And a couple more emails here. This from Dylan, who says, the book I'm currently reading is manga by the name of Naruto. It will be very hard to explain the plot, so to sum it up, it's a story of a young man trying to save the world along with his best friend. I highly recommend it. And then from Jean in Wauwatosa, she's read The Color of Water by James McBride, and it's not a new book, but she says it's funny, poignant, and a hugely inspirational dedication to the author's mother. So a couple there to dig into this summer. Are you familiar with Naruto?
Not too much, to be honest, really. But the Color of Water, you know, it's interesting because we've, you know, sometimes one of the things we're always looking out for here are these sort of themes that emerge, whether people, you know, plan it or not, you know, and we get very similarly titled books, we get books with very similar covers coming in, and we're always sort of just making note of that. And there are a couple other books that are coming out or out, and one is called To Be Sung Underwater, which is a really lovely novel, and then When We Danced on Water. So just a little, you could do a sort of troika of water-themed books.
Water-themed, are they also about people's mothers or just the water?
You know, mothers feature in one of them, I think, more than in To Be Sung Underwater, I think, When We Danced on Water. But they're very different books, but, you know, it's just a little connection.
Let's take another call. Kathy is with us from Stoughton. Hey, Kathy.
Hi there, Veronica. Haven't dove in too much to, like, the science fiction and fantasy realm too much, but there's a couple authors that I think are just absolutely wonderful summer reads. Not sure if Jim Butcher, per se, is coming out with a new book very soon. I really hope so. But I really appreciate his Judson File series, which is basically places a modern-day wizard in it, set in basically modern-day urban Chicago. And from someone who grew up near Chicago, it's very detailed, very authentic. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know where this is, and I know this neighborhood and things like that. And it's just like a really interesting twist and a very fast read.
And what is the name of that one again?
It's Jim Butcher's Dresden Files.
Dresden Files, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Oh, is there another?
Yep, and then another author that I'm very happy with is actually, his name is Brandon Sanderson, and his Mistborn trilogy is just phenomenal. Again, a very fast read, very fast pace. I guess as far as, like, different magic systems, so to say, I guess it's he's just very unique in his imagination, which you don't usually see in other fantasy authors. So just absolutely just wonderful series and very fast reads.
Okay, give us the title on that last one once more.
The last one, the author's name is Brandon Sanderson,
mm-hmm.
And it's the Mistborn Trilogy.
The Mistborn Trilogy.
Yeah, Mistborn
Trilogy.
Mistborn,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. Actually, our the editor who covers that here, Rose Fox, is a huge fan, and she's been talking Sanderson up around here lately.
And that's not one you've read yet, I take it?
No, it's not.
I can't believe you haven't read all these books.
I know. I need to, you know, the Evelyn Wood speed reading class.
Right. The foie gras method of reading. All right,
that's kind of what we have.
Yeah, I feel like that sometimes at my job too, but luckily I love reading so much, I'll take it.
Yeah, I know. There are worse things.
Let's talk to Valerie next from Boaz. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Veronica. Hi, guest. I want to recommend a book, Life List, that apparently you've talked about before on your show by Olivia Gentile. It's a perfect summer read. It's about the life of Phoebe Snetsinger, who was a bird watcher. The first woman to reach, or the first person, I think, to reach 8,000 birds that she had seen in her lifetime traveling all over the globe. She did this in a time when women really didn't do that. But that's a fascinating book for anybody.
Hmm. Yeah, I know Olivia, actually, a bit.
Mm.
And I love the book, yeah. I thought it was really interesting, very unique.
Right, that's not a topic you're going to hear about very often.
No.
That sounds wonderful. Well, thank you, Valerie. And we move to Phyllis from Brookfield. Hi, Phyllis.
Hello. Yes, I'm enjoying this on a dreary Monday morning. It's a wonderful topic. But I do have a question. I wonder how your guest felt about the highly touted Freedom by Jonathan Franzen and what his opinion. I love his talent, but I don't know. I'm ambivalent about my reaction to his book. I wonder what he felt.
I love that book, but let's hear what Mike says.
Well, I mean, I might lose some points here because I actually prefer the corrections. Freedom, I felt the more of it that I read, the less of an impact it seemed to have on me personally. But more than any other book, especially last year as we were doing our top books of the year roundup here, that book created huge arguments and discussions. And I also admire Franzen's talent and his also ambition. And I thought, you know, it was a fantastic, you know, somewhat satire of a certain, you know, class and type of person in America right now. But, you know, I wanted to love it more than I did in the end.
The only critique that I, you know, had, and I spoke to some other people about it, too, who'd read it, and that there was a certain coldness or lack of empathy for the characters.
Mm.
But that said, I also thought that he should have a spinoff book on Richard Katz, the rock star. He was he's pretty well drawn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I feel like in any kind of book of that size, you know, I felt like we had a lot of access to all the characters, really, the three, the main, you know, you know, Katz, however, because of his principles and things, I think, you know, it probably comes off, you know, the best. But I found it, I mean, formally, I really admired it as well, you know, just the way that he sort of plunges this into narrative. And then as soon as, you know, the son, Joey, moves next door, you know, we get this autobiography, you know, that goes on for quite a long time. And I kind of loved that. It was audacious. And, you know, what I love about a writer's career is watching the risks that they are prepared to take, the more confidence they get, you know, and nobody can probably be more confident right now than Franzen. Maybe Jennifer Egan.
Who's got another book out now, doesn't she? Did I see that?
Sorry?
Does she have a new book out?
Egan?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Is it just after Goon Squad?
Oh, so A Visit from the Goon Squad, is that the older one?
That's last year.
That's last year's, okay.
Yeah, about a year ago, this month, I think. And, you know, what was really interesting is, you know, there was, in at least in our quarters, you know, there was sort of a, you know, is it going to be Franzen? Is it going to be Egan? You know, and this rivalry even in the industry. And Egan ended up sort of being the more touted, you know, or writing the more touted book. And I feel like there's huge connections between their two books, you know, in terms of themes and subjects and, you know, what they're sort of trying to get at. And I haven't really heard that talked about much.
Yeah, I haven't heard that either. So I take it you're more of an Egan fan then.
I'm not. I liked the Visits from the Goonswad better than Freedom. But I feel like also Visit from the Goonswad is, you know, arguably one of Jennifer Egan's most accessible books. I think that, you know, in the past, her cleverness and you know, just, you know, ability to be very sort of postmodern, and there's definitely those elements to Visit from the Goonswad. You know, there's a graphic chapter that's, you know, this sort of PowerPoint presentation, you know, but I feel like, you know, novels in the past, like Look at Me and the Keep and others, were those clever elements work to keep the reader away a little bit. And that didn't really happen here for me.
So still worth a read. It's a year old, but A Visit from the Goonswad.
Yeah.
And another call now, Tony from St. Germain. Hey, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Tony, are you there?
Yeah, this is Tony from St. Germain.
Hi, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, I'd just like to recommend Mariner's Guardian from a young fledgling author. Veronica Olson is her name. I think she's from northern Wisconsin. It's a fantasy, kind of a love story, but I found it very intriguing and might be worth your checking out.
What is the title again?
Mariner's Guardian.
Mariner's Guardian. There's a nautical theme there, right?
Pardon me?
There's some sort of maritime theme?
Yes. So I think you guys would enjoy reading that. If you get a chance, check that out. I think you would enjoy it.
All right.
Thanks,
Tony.
I appreciate the show. Very interesting.
Good.
All right. We appreciate that. And another phone call, Jim from Hudson. Hello, Jim.
Hi there. I'm enjoying the show, and I have a few recommendations. Lately, I've been reading really old, dated books like this. Richard Hannay series by John Buchan, anything by E. Phillips Oppenheim, who supposedly was the father of the modern spy and crime novel. And it's the closest thing you can get to time travel. It's just low tech, a lot of daring do. It's just pretty interesting stuff.
What's the last author's name again?
E. Phillips Oppenheim.
All right, yeah.
And these books are from the 1920s, 30s. So they're pretty old. And John Buchan, I'm sure you're familiar with 39 Steps.
Yeah.
So you're rereading those, Jim?
I'm sorry?
Are you rereading those, the Oppenheim?
No, I'm just reading them for the first time.
Oh, you're reading them for the first time. Okay.
Discovery.
I got a hold of an auction catalog here. There was a book giveaway at the library in Sanibel, and they had an auction catalog from somebody's horrendously big spy book collection, and I looked through there and I found all kinds of neat authors that I'd never heard of before. So,
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, happy reading, Jim. We appreciate the call.
Thanks.
And how about Victoria joining us from Appleton? Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Veronica, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an avid reader, and especially in the summertime when it's the good time to read. And I'm currently reading a book by an Irish author called Skippy Dies. It's a very well-written book, a lot of humor, even though the topic is about a Dublin 14-year-old who goes to a private college school for boys. And it's just hilarious, but it also incorporates poetry and just the jacket says that it's a beautiful, heartfelt, hilarious portrait of the pain, joy, and occasional beauty of adolescence. And the author's name is Paul Murray, and he is from Ireland.
That does sound good.
And the other one I'm reading is the author who wrote Winter's Bone, Daniel Woodrell, W-O-O-D-R-E-L-L, and he's the Ozark writer, and Winter's Bone was made into a recent movie, good movie, and he really infuses the flavor of the Ozarks, and this is the story of a drifter who meets a young girl and her gay brother and how he passes through their lives and they pass through his life. He's a very, very good writer, and I recommend him highly to anybody. He's written several books, and this one is called Tomato Red by Daniel Woodrell. I love him. He kind of reminds me of, his style of writing is a lot like Pat Conroy, where he infuses the flavor of the environment where he was raised into fiction. And, of course, Pat Conroy is nonfiction, but this is just a wonderful book. So those are the two I recommend highly.
Great. Well, thank you for the passionate recommendations there.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Tomato Red and Skippy Dies are two from Victoria. And you want to comment on those at all, Mike?
I'm a big fan of Woodrow, actually. I grew up not that far from the Ozarks myself. And I think that, The Color Was Right, his writing is really fantastic. And he is able, he's from there, so it's not like some carpetbagger. So he infuses his books with, real verisimilitude. And they, you just really feel immersed in this culture that you don't typically see. And I think Ang Lee is actually making a film of another Woodrow book. So, Winter's Bone might have started a little bit of a resurgence of this Missouri writer.
Well, we're just about out of time. So, Mike Harfke, thank you so much for being on with us today. It's been fun.
Thank you, Veronica. It was great.
Mike Harfke, our guest, deputy reviews editor and fiction reviews editor at Publishers Weekly. I want to thank Rhonda Fanning for taking your phone calls and also for producing this couple hours of radio. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in all this week for Kathleen Dunn, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.